Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Halt Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I am Jim Galante. He is Sports Illustrated Big Ten writer Dustin Schutte. Dustin, how are we doing this week?
I'm doing great, Jim. How are you?
I'm playing injured or hurt. Okay. Got the cold going, got the congestion, the nasal thing, but I'm going to try to power my way through it, Dustin, see if we can survive it. It's a big week in Big Ten football, but maybe even more importantly, it's a big week for you and I sports wise. Our Mets and Braves have a 3-game series going, and good chance the winner of the series gets the playoff spot.
Yeah, I was thinking I might hijack the show, not come on or something, you know, to get that little rivalry brewing even more. But there's going to be plenty of intense moments from Tuesday to Thursday before we get into the Big Ten football weekend. So our eyes will be glued to football all weekend, but from Tuesday to Thursday, it's going to be all baseball between us.
Yeah, that's exactly it. And it should make next week's show a lot of fun after the fact. So
sure.
we'll see how that goes. And I'm not sure, depending on how it turns out, may determine whether you show up or not. So I've got my fingers crossed that you'll show up. But anyway, let's talk some Big Ten football. Dustin, some really big games this past week. Let's start where the weekend started. Friday night, Illinois, Nebraska at Nebraska. Big game, both teams going into an undefeated. This was that traditional Big Ten West kind of game. And I know it was a surprise to me. Illinois looked pretty good. They pulled out the win.
Yeah, that was an impressive performance from Illinois to go in there in a hostile environment on a Friday night on a short week. And that was the 400th straight sellout for Nebraska, right? So it was a big-time atmosphere. So we've talked about Brett Bielema is a really good coach. To have his guys ready, this is now Kansas no longer looks like a great win, but this is now Illinois' second win over a ranked opponent. Luke Altmyer is a quarterback that I don't think is getting enough attention, and maybe that will change after this weekend, but 10 touchdowns this season with no interceptions. This guy is slinging it all over the field. He's got some really good receivers. Brett Bielema has done a really good job. This was a team I thought was going to kind of struggle along. I thought they were going to have to rebuild. But the other thing was their defense, their secondary is opportunistic. They can break up passes. Their defensive line they were really good, especially in that overtime, getting through Nebraska's offensive line and getting Dylan Raiola. That was just a really, really good performance from Illinois. And I don't even think Nebraska's defense did not play well, but I don't think they were horrendous. Like that, I thought Illinois won that game as opposed to Nebraska losing it.
Well, it was interesting on a lot of fronts. Now, as a Penn State person, we think of Illinois, Brett Bielema, 3 yards in a cloud of dust.
Yeah.
And that is still, I think, the way they want to play the game. They ran the ball more than they threw it. But in Altmyer, here's another situation where you have that transfer quarterback. He started out at Ole Miss. Now at Illinois, playing well, being efficient in his throw. Where did I see it? He was 21 for 27 for 215 yards, 4 touchdowns, no interceptions. That's a nice line to have for an Illinois quarterback.
That's really a good stat line for him. And I remember earlier in this season, Brett Bielema talking about, you know, the things that Luke Altmyer does really well is he's very good with situations and knows, like, you're probably going to throw an interception at some point in the season. But he takes care of the football. He has a high IQ, and he knows that this is going to sound really dumb because you never want to throw an interception as a quarterback, but it's almost like he knows when he absolutely cannot make those kind of mistakes. So as opposed to like trying to force something, he's just going to throw it away or he's going to take the sack because he knows that that's better than throwing an interception. So I think when you look at Luke Altmyer, I thought of this guy as, I hate using the term game manager because I thought he was a good quarterback, but you're right. With Illinois, you just kind of think, can the quarterback do you enough to win six or seven games? I think Luke Altmyer, the way he's playing so far, this is a quarterback that is playing for a team that can win 9 or 10 games. Now, I know their schedule amps up significantly beginning this weekend, but yeah, I've been thoroughly impressed with Illinois. 4-0, I think a lot of people looking at the schedule at this point in the season would have said Illinois is probably going to be 2-2 going into that Penn State game.
I think so. And it's an interesting, I don't know if this is just a case of looking at things from the Penn State perspective. 2 weeks ago, Bowling Green gave Penn State fits, and it was a veteran transfer quarterback in Connor Bazelak, yep, who really frustrated the Penn State defense. I'm getting some of those same kind of vibes from Altmyer, who a transfer quarterback, a veteran quarterback who's been around, will do, as you said, Bielema talked about. He's not going to make the mistakes, especially at the worst times. So for Illinois to do that, it was an impressive win on the road. It was also fascinating to me. Again, this is from the Penn State perspective, with the Matt Rhule at Nebraska is a Penn State fan favorite. Okay. Yes. It's Franklin Gutt. Why don't we get Matt Rhule in here? What's fascinating to me is the Nebraska fan reaction to Matt Rhule after this game, where he's under fire. And interestingly enough, one of the stats they put out there is he is 2-20 versus ranked opponents.
Yeah. That statistic, So I live with a Nebraska fan, right? And so we were talking about, and she had mentioned that statistic, and I said, there's no way that can be right. He had a couple 10-win seasons at Temple. He got Baylor to whatever their record was, 11-1 or 11-2. He has to have a better record. Nope. So that is a very interesting thing, and it's going to be interesting to keep an eye on that. He probably hasn't had a ton of opportunities, and it's obviously hard to win against ranked opponents at Temple. But this is the one thing I've said about Nebraska since the start of the season, is their first half, they play really well. The second half, they've just kind of hit cruise control and like want to ball control you to get the win. What's going to happen when they get punched in the mouth in the second half? And I think you kind of saw it. I think that even though you don't want to run up the score against Northern Iowa and UTEP, I think that there is some value in playing for a full 60 minutes, especially when you're a program trying to learn, like implement situational football. And I think that's what bit them. These are the close games that Nebraska has lost time and time again over the last how many years. And these are the games that they're going to have to start winning if they want to get back to the top of the Big Ten.
Exactly. Now, what I find interesting is I am not one of those Penn State people who've been yelling for Matt Rhule. Okay. Yeah. I think he's done some good things, but I'm not lobbying for him to become the next Penn State coach. But I also think from the Nebraska perspective, don't overreact to this loss. You still have your team, I believe, going in the right direction. And you have, when was the last time Nebraska has had a quarterback that they could build around?
Exactly. It's been a long time. They've thought they've had that quarterback, but they really haven't. And these things, like, it still takes time. This was something I was asked. I've been asked on multiple radio shows, was Nebraska, they would read the schedule, who they're playing, Illinois, Purdue, Rutgers, Indiana. Will Nebraska be 7-0? Going into that Ohio State game? And I know hindsight is 20/20, but I said I would give them about a 40 to 50% chance of that being the case. The reason being, Jim, is I think on paper, Nebraska is probably better than all four of those teams. If you just lined them up and played the game on paper, probably better. But it is really hard to win 7 straight football games, especially when you're a program that's not accustomed to that. Like, this is, they're still learning. So I agree with you. There's no reason. It's a frustrating loss. No doubt you look at some of those plays, you wish you could have had them back, critical mistakes. But he does have this program heading in the right direction. They've got the players. They've got the quarterback. And let's remember, like, Dylan Rayola is a freshman. This was his fourth game. This was a second primetime game. And he played. Colorado doesn't have a defense, but Illinois does. So this was the first real test against a good defense. So don't overreact. He's obviously a freshman, going to make some of those freshman mistakes. And I think that's what happened on Friday night. I don't think it's time to hit the panic button. Still a really good football team in Lincoln.
And they are heading in the right direction. Let's shift to probably the biggest game in the conference was Michigan hosting USC. I think you and I both felt pretty good about USC in this game. And I think the only question going into it was, all right, how would USC handle this is Midwest, Big Ten style football, and how are they going to react to that? And Michigan was able to turn it into a Michigan game.
Yeah. And so I have to take the criticism, right? I've been praised the last couple of weeks for saying Michigan's not that good. So I'll take the criticism and eat crow after saying I thought USC at 5.5 was a lock because I thought they'd kind of run away with it with their improved defense. But I don't know. Has their running game, this is going to be really interesting to see how Michigan, like, I'm almost torn, Jim, because it seems like Alex Orji and the offense looks better. Can they run the football? At the same time, if this was your best offensive approach, why was Davis Warren the starter in the first place? I don't know how I feel about it. I don't know if this was just USC's inability to stop the run or if this was Michigan finding its footing and saying, hey, this is how we're going to win a lot of football games. Because you're right. When they play defenses that are accustomed to stopping the run and challenging the run, what's it going to look like? So I'm not Michigan, I think maybe a little bit better than I had thought, but I'm not completely sold that they'll be a contender at the top of the conference again.
Well, the thing with Michigan in that game was things went their way in that style. They had the pick six, which was obviously huge. The big run that they had in that last drive was so critical. They had a couple big plays that went their way. I don't know if in the rest of the season that will be the case, that they will have those things going their way. And especially when they play teams like Oregon, Ohio State, you know, if they'll be able to get away with it. And when we come back, I want to make one last point about Michigan and the way they run the ball, and I'm going to go back to what they did against Penn State last season. We'll do that right after this break. Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Halt Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It is quarter number two. I'm Jim Galante. He is Dustin Schutte, Sports Illustrated writer for the Big Ten Sports. I was ready to say football, but I know you do more than just football there, although that's what we're going to be talking about. We finished up quarter number one talking about the Michigan win over USC, and the point that I want to make about it is a year ago when Michigan was so good, they came in and played Penn State, and they famously or infamously ran the ball like on 17 consecutive plays. It's all they did in the second half was run the ball, but they still had the threat of being able to throw the ball with J.J. Redick, okay? It wasn't that locked in, that's all they could do. I wonder if this Michigan team could go up against an Ohio State defense or a Penn State defense and get away with the style that they had against USC.
I don't think so. I think that there are, and this is a game, this is looking ahead of the schedule, because I think they'll probably take care of Minnesota. But then in a few weeks, over the next, whatever that is, because I think they got a bye worked in, they play a Washington team that I haven't been high on, but that's a Washington team that ranks fifth in the Big Ten quietly in defensive total yardage and defensive scoring. And then the two weeks after that, they'll play Illinois, who we just got done raving about. And those are two really good defensive football coaches. And I think that they're going to say, I think what's going to happen, Jim, is teams are just going to dare them to throw.
Yes, you have to play them that way. And the fact is, both Washington and Illinois games are on the road for Michigan.
Yeah.
Which adds a little bit to it. And of course, they still have Oregon and Ohio State on their schedule. So I do think more of Michigan now after that game, seeing that, hey, they want it the Michigan way. But, I'll ask it to you this way. Did that game tell you more about Michigan or more about USC?
Yes. I think so. Let me give credit to Michigan, because I know I've kind of brushed them under the rug and thrown some shade at them, which I'm sure sits well with your fan base, but probably not with the people up in Ann Arbor. I think what I liked more about that game was Sharon Moore not being stubborn in his willingness to adjust and say, hey, you know what? This isn't how we're going to win football games with Davis Warren throwing. Like, he's just not capable of leading our offense right now. And so making that switch and committing to the run, I think shows us, well, I mean, Michigan's always been a running team, but for him to just say, you know what, we're going to run it 50 times and we're going to make you stop it, and to stick with that and not get selfish, I thought was a good sign. I think USC, their defense might be good against the pass. I don't know. I think I'm more curious now about USC, because I still think they're a really good team, but their offense was not firing. I know Michigan's got a really good defense. Their defense played okay, but you've got to be able to stop the run in the Big Ten. So I think I'm more impressed with Michigan and Sharon Moore as a head coach through four games now. And I think USC is still really good. I just have more questions, because which team is going to show up? And, you know, as good as they were against LSU, that was an LSU team that struggled with UCLA at home. So who knows? We're going to find out some more about USC this weekend when they play Wisconsin.
Well, there's also, you know, we always want early in the season to create this transitive property of, well, you know, if LSU was good and USC beat them, then we come to some conclusions, until we find out, well, maybe LSU isn't quite as good as we thought they were. Maybe a win against Florida State isn't quite as good as we thought it was.
Yeah.
Things change after a couple weeks. Plus, these teams are not quite as consistent. It's not the same team every week of the year, are they, Dusty?
No, they are certainly not the same team. That's what was the old Lou Holtz saying? You're playing a different team every week. Doesn't, like, whatever team you saw last week, you're going to play a different team this week in terms of who the opponent. Like, so it's just it's always changing. So it'll be interesting. But I'll give Michigan props. You prove me wrong.
Well, let me switch to another game last week that I think was a sneaky important game. It was Rutgers and Virginia Tech. Yep. And I've mentioned this before. In fact, literally while we were recording, I got a text message from my buddy who's the Rutgers fan. And Rutgers beat Virginia Tech. I know it's an out-of-conference game, but I just had the feeling that was a critical game for Rutgers, because it's a game that could have gone either way. They were at Blacksburg for it. They escaped with the win. That kind of gives, I think, Rutgers that confidence going forward. That was an important win for them.
That was a huge win, because again, you look at their schedule, and it's kind of one of those things where they can manage. Obviously, we've talked about their schedule being lighter this season. But it's kind of one of those things, like, if you don't beat Virginia Tech, then those games that we think you're going to be favored in are suddenly toss-up games. And so I think that this was a big victory for them. But I actually am going to go the other way a little bit on this, Jim. I maybe am not as high on Rutgers after that performance. And the reason being is I know we saw the first half against Howard was just kind of the first half jitters. They had a lot of guys out, but they had a 23-7 lead, I think it was, in that game, 23-6, whatever it was, allowed Virginia Tech to tie the game in the fourth quarter. This isn't a team that we've seen play a full four quarters yet. I think they're better. I think Ethan Calliope-Manis gives them something where they can stretch the field better than they ever have. And Greg, since Greg Schiano returned in 2020, but you got to play, be able to play a full four quarters. And I kind of question whether they're able to do that after that, game.
It's a very good point. And I think this is one of those things too, with this team, is they need to learn how to win.
Yeah.
It's Rutgers teams. They just, I think winning is a skill. You learn how to win, and they're going to have several games. We talked about this before the season started, that they don't play any of the top teams in the Big Ten. They miss Penn State, Ohio State. They miss Michigan. They miss Oregon. Okay, that's fine and good, but they're going to be playing a lot of these games. And I look at their next three games, Washington, Nebraska, and Wisconsin. Okay, I don't see them as a heavy favorite against any of them. None of those three are a walkover, but none of those games are, hey, I can't picture them winning. Right. Those are three games that could go either way.
Yeah, what's really advantageous for them is you play Washington at home on a Friday. Washington has to make a cross-country trip. They're going to play about 4 p.m. local time. So Washington's on a short week, even shorter. And you get that opportunity at home. And then that means you then get an extra day to prepare for your road trip to Nebraska. So that's really, when you look at these next, I'm just going to look at the next two games, that's really advantageous for them. So not only do they get a scheduling benefit because they miss, as you mentioned, the only top team they really play is USC. They get a scheduling benefit because Washington has to fly whatever it is, 2,000 miles across the country to Rutgers to play on a Friday night at 4 p.m. local time. So, I think Rutgers is going to be probably a favorite, and I don't know, I haven't actually looked at the spread of this. Maybe 2.5 points favorite, getting them the home field advantage in this.
And I should have that, and I'm surprised that I don't on my list of games, because I was looking at some of the spreads for this week, and here we go. Yeah, Rutgers is a 2.5 point favorite. You did. Very good. It's surprising to me. We'll be talking about some of the games coming up this week and some interesting spreads, but I'm a little bit surprised that the Big Ten allowed that to happen, Washington going coast to coast and having to play Friday night. Because overall, and I've said this before, I am not a huge fan of the Big Ten conference, the administration, but whoever their schedule maker is, I'm very impressed with them. It seemed like they did so much work to avoid having those West Coast teams making back-to-back road trips. They did a really good job for it. Now, I'm sure that television was the one who did that, not the schedule makers. But I'm still surprised that the Big Ten allowed that to happen to a West Coast team.
Yeah, I am too, a little bit. And Rutgers, they pay for it later in the season in late October. That's when they go to USC on a Friday night for an 11 o'clock kickoff. So they get, I don't want to, reprimand is not the right word, but they'll have some consequences.
Payback.
Yeah, that's a good word. I'm going to be honest, Jim. I hate football night. I hate college football games on Friday nights. Don't like it.
As a rule, here in Pennsylvania, high school football is very, very important. Mm-hmm. Very important. And that's Friday night. And the feeling has always been Friday night is for high school football. And I do appreciate that James Franklin has said that. They don't want to play on a Friday night. You're not going to see a Friday night game at Beaver Stadium. That's you know, just the way it's going to be. And I wish that were the case nationally. With that said, though, on a Friday night last week, I'm watching Nebraska, Illinois.
Yeah, well, that's true. Yep, we're not going anywhere, are we? We're gonna tune in. We hate it, but we're gonna turn on the TV when those big games are on.
Real quick, I just want to get your comment on two other games. I thought it was significant. Iowa putting up 31 points and beating Minnesota, and although not a conference team, BC still looking pretty good in beating Michigan State. That's another win for Bill O'Brien and his BC team.
Yeah, so Minnesota, anytime they played, they looked really good against Rhode Island and Nevada, but anytime they played somebody with a pulse, they have not looked good, especially offensively. Caleb Johnson at Iowa might be the best running back in the Big Ten.
Which is saying a lot.
That is saying a lot. He's been incredible, so shout out to him. And then the Michigan State-Boston College game, Michigan State quit turning the damn ball over. Four turnovers. Aiden Chiles has thrown, seven interceptions? They lead the Big Ten with 10 turnovers through four games. And I think they might lead the Big Ten in total penalties too, or penalty yardage. That just not a disciplined team. They've got a lot to work on.
Not a good combo there. All right, that's it for quarter number two. When we get back, we look at Dustin's power rankings. Stay tuned.
Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and Cafe Tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Halt Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number three. He's Dustin, I'm Jim. We're talking all things Big Ten football, which is appropriate since Dustin is a Big Ten writer for Sports Illustrated. And every week you put out your power rankings. Let me just read off the top five or six or so, so folks know what we're talking about. You have Ohio State number one, Penn State number two, Oregon three. Those Wolverines that Dustin loves so much, he has them up to number four. Illinois five. And USC dropping quite a bit down to number six. Dustin, at the top, the big movers, Michigan and USC, based on that game where the Wolverines upset USC.
Yeah. Again, I have to give them credit. They've got now a ranked win. It doesn't absolve the blowout loss they had to Texas, but I think Texas is really good. Again, their ability to make adjustments. And just the fact, Jim, that I really don't know right now. I don't think I like a team at number four. I think I've said this every week. I think the top three teams are pretty much solidified. And we'll see what happens when we get deeper into Big Ten play. But I think Ohio State, so far they haven't played anybody, but they've blown out everybody they played, as they should. Penn State, a nice bounce back game. And I know it's against Kent State, but I'm going to ask this. Have you ever seen that type of yardage discrepancy in your life?
No, it was 700 some to 68, something like that. It was just crazy.
And 40 first downs to six. Dear Lord, it was amazing that they weren't leaving in body casts after that game.
Well, a couple of the quarterbacks did go down and were carted off the field. And it was interesting being at the game, Dustin. I thought of this after the first quarter when it was just 7-0. I was wondering if fans, you know, across the country were just scoreboard watching, saw that and said, oh, geez, it's Kent State and you're only up 7-0. But when you watch the game, they were dominating the game with total yardage. They were moving the ball up and down the field. They had one drive early in the game, Bo Probola comes in, the backup quarterback, and does something, threw a little pass over the middle. He didn't see a defender who was cutting across, wasn't part of the play. He wasn't the guy covering the tight end, and he made an excellent play, made the interception that stopped the drive, which there's a couple points to that. It was kind of a freaky turnover play, but it was also shows you how much a turnover could affect the score of a game. But Kent State's not a good team.
No.
Combine the two scores. What is that? Let me do my math. That's about 126-0 or 127-0 over their last two games against Tennessee and Penn State.
Yeah, that's pretty bad. But I think I'm going to comment on this really quick. You said looking at the score after that first quarter when it's 7-0. I still think, and this is new to this is still new to college football, the clock situation with not stopping after first downs, those games go by a lot quicker now. So I think it seems like some of these teams like Penn State, Ohio State, some of those games have been like, you know, 7-0 or 10-7 at the end of the first quarter. And it's just because they don't have as many possessions as like in before this, they would have had 3 or 4 possessions and it would be 21 or 28-0 because the clock's constantly stopping. But now with the clock moving, I think that's why some of these lesser opponents are able to make it look respectable for a little bit longer as opposed to just getting blown out in the first 10 minutes.
Oh, I think that's a very valid point. And if you're that underdog team, limit the number of possessions. And that is what you're looking to do, which I'm glad you brought up time of possession. I know this is a bit off topic, but it's the kind of thing I always find it interesting listening to announcers of games throwing out the dumbest statistics ever. And there was a game a couple weeks ago where one team, they got the first possession. They got the kickoff, had their first possession, kick it to the opposition, and then the first team got their second possession. So it's 2-1, and they started talking about time of possession. Yes, Bowling Green or Kent State, they took the kickoff. So yes, they had 2 possessions. Penn State had 1. Yes, they're going to have a greater time of possession at that point of the game. It's not relevant. But it then did happen at the end of the first half where Penn State had what looked like their final possession with about 2 minutes to go. They just marched down very quickly. Kent State gets the ball. They're down 21-0. And I'm thinking, you know, just end the half. Just get out of there. No, they throw the ball on first down, stop the clock. And James Franklin says, well, if that's going to be the case, calls timeout on 2nd and 3rd down. Kent State has to punt. Penn State gets the ball back with 59 seconds. And I think they only needed about 30 of those 60 seconds to score. So it was not pretty. Kent State is ranked as perhaps the worst team in college football for a very good reason. I'm beginning to feel sorry for them. But what's fascinating is, though, I'm one of those guys who says, why do you schedule games like this? But this is not the worst kind of game because Kent State is a MAC team, just like Northern Illinois is, just like Bowling Green is. So when you schedule the game, this isn't necessarily what you expected.
No, I mean, I think there have been some, like several years ago, Northern Illinois was in the Orange Bowl, or they played in a big time bowl game. Like sometimes these programs can be really good depending on the coach, depending on, and obviously, you know, Penn State had their hands full a few weeks ago against Bowling Green. So it's just, you just never know what team you're going to get when you schedule these teams in these conferences. You could get one of the best teams, one of the best group of 5 teams out there, or you could get a Kent State, which might be the worst team in college football.
Exactly. It's not scheduling Delaware. It's not scheduling Villanova, you know, which Penn State has done over the last couple of years. So, all right, let's look at the rest of the power rankings. I'm looking to see teams that have made moves. Nebraska, of course, down after their loss. Washington, you had moving up 3 spots. I've been getting on you about having Washington too low.
Yep. Yep. I think Washington's starting to, I'm starting to buy into Washington a little bit more. We still haven't seen a lot. The best team they played, Washington State, they came up short and they had a chance to win that game, but couldn't convert at the goal line. But to hold Northwestern to 112 yards and just 5 points, that's pretty impressive. So I'll give them some props there. But yeah, I think Washington's on the rise. Not ready to put them quite ahead of Michigan State. I had Michigan State 11, Washington 12 this week. Because I think Michigan State is hectic. I mean, just if you love chaos, and just watch Michigan State, because they will hit a 90-yard touchdown pass and then throw an interception on a 3-yard out. Like it is, it is crazy to watch those two, that team.
I know you follow closely both Purdue and Indiana. Tell me about this Indiana team that seems to just throw up so many points.
Yeah, I mean, this is another team that I think Indiana is far and away already much better than they were under Tom Allen. I know that's hard to hear because now he's running the defense up at Penn State, but some guys just aren't great head coaches, and I think that might have been the case for Tom Allen. Yeah, I mean, just scoring at will, but again, this is a team that has played FIU, Western Illinois, UCLA, and now Charlotte. And I think those teams probably have three wins this season. So it's not the best competition. I'm really curious to see what they do this week against a Maryland team that can, you know, get into a shootout with them basically.
Well, they have on their schedule, Maryland and Northwestern. But they are two winnable games for them.
Yep.
They can look pretty good. Then they have a bye week before they host Nebraska, which things fall right for them. They can be ranked by that time.
Indiana could be ranked. They could be six. They could be bowl eligible before Halloween. That is so foreign in Bloomington, let me tell you. Yeah, Kurt Cignetti deserves a lot of credit. I think when he took the podium at Big Ten Media Days, he said something to the effect of, "We've been picked to finish last or second to last twice as when I was a coach, and we finished second in the league both times," or something to that effect. I don't remember exactly what the position was, but basically he's like, "I'm not predicting anything. I'm just telling you." He's told us, and so far he's backed it up. And I think a lot of people thought, well, this is just the bravado you have to have if you're going to coach at Indiana. Doesn't necessarily mean it's going to translate. Well, so far it's translated. Now, what happens when they do play Maryland? I think they'll probably beat Northwestern, but I think we'll find out what Indiana's really made of in that game against Maryland. That's going to be their best opponent that they played. And like I said, Maryland could have put up a lot of points. Ty Felton, he's got more receiving yards than four Big Ten teams have passing yards through the first four games of the season.
Wow, that's a weapon. So yeah, that'll be a fun game. Let's circle back to you were talking about the top of the power rankings, and you have difficulty every week naming the fourth team. Do you now look at this and say, you know what, this is the Big Ten's going to have three teams in the playoffs?
Yeah, I don't think there's any. I don't think. You'd have to have in my opinion, you'd almost have to have a wild card in there. Like, you'd have to think Illinois would go 10-2 or something if you're going to get a fourth. Because I don't think Michigan is that. I don't think they're playoff good. I don't think USC. I think USC is probably going to drop another game or two. I think a lot of people thought maybe Nebraska could sneak in. I think after that loss to Illinois, like I think it's three teams. I think you're looking at the top three teams in the Big Ten, and that's probably going to be, and like I said, unless you get a surprise, unless Rutgers gets it together, Illinois, like it would have to be some sort of major dark horse, in my opinion, that gets in there. Maybe we're talking about Indiana in the playoff. How about that?
Now that would be crazy. I don't know if one of those wild card crazy things could happen. I still think it's up to USC or Michigan to surprise us the rest of the way, play well enough. You know, for USC, maybe it's a win over Penn State.
Yeah.
You know, kind of catapults them back into this, Dustin.
Yeah. See, that's where I think, because USC plays Penn State, Michigan still has to play Ohio State. I'm thinking those are each team at max now is 10-2. I mean, I don't like to rack up wins because I know that those are going to be competitive games. As we mentioned, they're going to play a different team each week, right? But at the same time, just on paper, I would give them each another loss.
And Michigan also has Oregon. All right, that is it for quarter number three. We got one more quarter to go. Stick with us.
Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Hall Thaddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello, welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim, he's Dustin. We are talking Big Ten football. We took a look at last week's games. We took a look at Dustin's power rankings. Now, Dustin, it's time to look ahead at this week. We're finally getting into more of a regular conference schedule. Finally going to have a whole plate of games. A couple of big ones, couple of interesting ones. Let's start with where our Penn State fans are most interested. It's Illinois is at Penn State. It's going to be Saturday night, NBC, 7:30 game. So they'll have a lot of eyeballs on it. Have you seen the point spread for this game yet?
I saw the opening was like 16 or 17 and a half.
Well, it actually, what I saw it opening at was at 18. I saw one line had 18, one line had at 17 and a half. It's now at 17. I would not be surprised if it continues to go down.
Oh, I'm shocked. Yes, I am shocked at that. And not in the sense that maybe Penn State is 17 points better, but I think Illinois is going to give Penn State some problems. Because as you mentioned a few weeks ago, they had trouble with Connor Bazelak, an experienced quarterback. Luke Altmyer is an experienced quarterback. He just went on the road and beat Nebraska, and that was a pretty good Nebraska defense. I don't think Illinois is a better team than Penn State, but this is also an Illinois team that, and Brett Bielema can scheme you up. He went into Penn State a few years ago and won that 9 overtime game. I think that this is going to be a really, really good game. Like, I don't know where that 17 points is coming from. Maybe I'm crazy. I don't know. But I think Illinois' secondary can give Drew Aller and Penn State some fits. Because if you watch that Nebraska game, those wide receivers had a lot of trouble getting open. That secondary is super good. So it's not one of those where I think Penn State's offensive line is probably better and can hold up against Illinois' defensive line. But you might see some coverage sacks in that game.
Well, it's funny. First of all, this spread stunned me also. When I was in the press box on Saturday for Penn State game and chatting with a couple people who pay attention to what the spreads are, let's put it that way.
Yeah.
And I asked, what do you think the spread's going to be? I had one person tell me they thought it would be 7 points. I had someone else say 9 or 10. My feeling was in between. I thought it would be more than a touchdown, but not quite the two scores, like 10 points. I was saying 8 or 9. So I would fall on 8.5. So when this came out at 18 points, I was absolutely stunned by it. And it really made me think that this is one of those games that Penn State has to get out quickly. James Franklin, I don't know if you saw this in his press conference. He wants this to be a whiteout energy game. Okay. Yeah. He had to throw that in because it's not officially a whiteout, but no doubt he wants to see it essentially played like a whiteout. And I think it's the kind of game that Penn State could get the early lead. The crowd will become a factor. And yes, it could get ugly. But if it goes the other way, Illinois strikes first blood, it could be a long evening.
Yeah, I mean, it could be a long evening either way you go. I think Penn State is the more talented team. I don't think there's any doubt about that. This is going to be a put on your big boy pants game for Drew Aller. I think he played well against West Virginia. This is his first primetime game of this season. And I think that that's why it's good that they had a game like Kent State last week, coming out of the bye, kind of working off the rust. And now you're prepared to play a really good Illinois secondary. I think the key to this is going to be, I hate to, you know, be cliche and hammer the points home, but I think taking care of the football is critically important in this game. You can't turn it over and give Illinois extra opportunities. And they've got a defensive back in Xavier Scott, who might be right now the Big Ten Defensive Player of the Year. That guy is all over the field. He had two interceptions and a pick six against Kansas. He had two big pass breakups against Nebraska. I mean, this is going to be a true test for that Penn State offense. And then, again, we saw Tom Allen's defense kind of get, you know, scratched up against Bowling Green. And Illinois is a team that scratched up that Nebraska defense. So in all facets, I think part of the reason, and I'm always interested in this, I wonder if part of the reason that was such a big spread is the jersey value, in the sense that you don't traditionally think that Illinois is going to have much of a chance against Penn State. But I think that this Illinois team is a little bit different. I'm with you. I thought it would have been like in the 8.5 to 9.5 point range, basically a 10 point spread in that area. But it'll be interesting. I think this is going to be a really fun one for a Saturday night.
It will be interesting to see. The couple things I'll mention is I think it was good for Drew Aller to play at West Virginia.
Yeah.
Big game, hostile crowd. West Virginia was very much primed for that. And you mentioned the turnovers, and I may regret saying this. Drew Aller is usually pretty careful with the ball. Penn State doesn't turn the ball over. But what they've had an issue with is penalties. And, you know, you complete a pass on third down for a first down, but it gets called back because of holding.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden you're third and 15 or third and 20. They've been stopped by that. There was one really blatant drop pass against West Virginia. So it's not like it's been a trend, but over, you know, last season, that was a big deal. Penn State's wide receivers dropping passes. They can't beat themselves. Is the situation. We mentioned this game earlier when we talked about it. It's a Friday night game, but Washington at Rutgers, that's a pretty big game now for both teams.
Yeah, that's huge, because I think that for Washington, this is, I don't know if this is the best team that they'll play, but this is definitely going to present a challenge, because Rutgers is going to be physical. They're going to drag you into a phone booth. And then Washington, I think, kind of wants to do the same based on the what we've seen from them so far. Like I said, this is a team that top five defense in both scoring and total yardage. I think if you're Rutgers, you want to run the football, but again, you've got Ethan Calicmanis. Can you hit on some of those explosive plays? I think if they can hit on some of those deep balls, I think they've got the talent and the experience to win this game. But if it's, I don't know, this could be one of those grinded out Big Ten West type of games. I know that Washington is really West, and Rutgers spent all of its time in the Big Ten East when we had divisions. But I think that this could be a really physical 17-14 type of game.
Yes, and that's what Rutgers wants. They want it to be that kind of game, and that's what they excel at. One other Big Ten game I wanted to ask you about is Wisconsin is at USC. USC, a 14-point favorite. I don't think we pictured that spread before this season started. Where is Wisconsin and Luke Fickell with this team? For them to be that a two-touchdown underdog like that is not what they expected at this point in the season.
No, they're still growing. They're still kind of building the foundation there. Not in a great spot. This isn't your traditional Wisconsin team. The one benefit is that Tyler Van Dyke went down in that Alabama game. That's not the benefit. The benefit, though, is that they got a bye week to kind of prepare. They got 2 weeks to get Braden Lochte up to speed. And so we'll see. I think what is going to be interesting, Jim, is Wisconsin hasn't run the football particularly well through the first couple games. At the same time, USC couldn't stop the run against Michigan. So I think Michigan gave Wisconsin a blueprint. The question to me is, what does USC's offense look like? And can Wisconsin's defense keep them in check? And I don't know the answer to that question. So I don't – USC, Wisconsin, based on how those two teams have played, I think Wisconsin's not been good. But I think that this might be a game. And I think because Wisconsin's just going to milk the clock, try to keep USC's offense on the sideline. And like I said, I think Michigan gave everybody else a blueprint as to how to beat USC. And that's just run the football until they prove they can stop it.
And you still have this whole, the Pac-12 team coming into the Big Ten. There's no one more Big Ten than Wisconsin, you know.
Correct.
That's, you know, the impression that you get. So I did want to ask you, it's not a Big Ten game, but it's a national game. And I kind of caught myself after I said the words, you know, Penn State, Illinois, playing at night, all the eyeballs will be on that. Except that there's another pretty big game going on, which is Georgia at Alabama. And I don't know if this is one of those games where both these teams are going to be making the playoffs anyway, and this diminishes the regular season games. But my goodness, it's still Georgia, Alabama. And the Southeast Conference has protected those two teams for years from having to play each other in the regular season. Huge game.
Yeah. This is massive, and I think we're going to see what Kalen DeBoer is made of in this game, because obviously his first year, he proved himself at Fresno State. He proved himself at Washington. He's done a good job so far at Alabama, but this is, are the Crimson Tide up to Georgia standards? And I know that that's kind of reverse as to what we're used to, right? But I think the script has flipped in the SEC. I think Georgia's been the dominant program for the last 3 or 4 years. So yeah, this is going to be really an intriguing game. And, I think that with divisionless SEC football, I hope we see more of these type of games, because this is one of those where I don't think a loss hurts either team, as long as it's not like a 52 to 14 type of game. This is what we want. These are the kinds of games we want. Georgia, Alabama, a lot of playoff implications. We'll find out how good Alabama is.
We will. And we're also going to find out how good Georgia is. I'm with you. If this is a competitive game, you know, say a one-score game either way, I don't think either team suffers a lot, which I'm okay with, because they're both very, very good teams. And if the loser of this game still makes the playoffs, I'm okay with that, Dustin.
Yeah, I am too. Maybe it's a preview as to what we see in the SEC championship game. I don't know. There's a lot of really good teams down there. That's the one negative. Maybe you see this in the regular season. You don't get it in the SEC championship, just depending on what happens with some of those other teams. Missouri's in the top 11. Ole Miss is obviously very good. Some other really good teams in the SEC. But, this is fun. This is the equivalent of like Ohio State, Michigan, or Ohio State, Oregon, Michigan, Oregon, some of those games. Penn State, Ohio State, same type of quality, and we're finally getting it in the SEC.
And just remember, in a couple more weeks, we'll get Georgia versus Texas. All right, that is it for our show. Thank you all for listening. Make sure you join us next time on the Keystone Kickoff Show.
Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, Enjoy Cafe Tea pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.